My name's Mark, and I'm an alcoholic. It's now time for the newcomer ask portion of the program. As many of you have seen, this box was in the back of the room, along with a stack of 3x5 cards and a pen. And what we'd like to have people do is to write down any question that they may have about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, put it in the slot here. Then we come up and select a question from the box, and we'll try to answer that question using the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, AA-approved literature, and our panel of experts right behind me. Let's see what we have this week. Dear Mark Alcoholic, I think some of those questions are real, but I think a lot of them are fake. I think you write them. What's the deal? And this is signed and submitted by Travis B. from Cameron Creek. Travis, are you in the room? Anybody else from Cameron Creek area? You know where Cameron Creek is, right? Over there, Farmersville. Home of Fly's Grave. Also the birthplace of the Pallet Fence. A Tulare County landscaping tradition. So as to the question, I think a lot of them are fake. I think you write them. What's the deal? Well, as you know, Travis, this is a program of rigorous honesty. Let's see if there's another question in here. And there is. Hey, a lot of AA stuff says it's from AA World Services. Is AA all over the world? Are meetings the same in other countries? And this was submitted by Francois T. from Pixley. Well, Francois, that's an excellent question. I just don't have the experience or background to tell you what meetings might be like in other parts of the world. But I'm wondering if somebody on our panel of experts might have some more knowledge about that. Bill H.
I think that one was planted. I know Gary can answer that question just as well, if not better than I can, but the answer is absolutely affirmative. AA has reached around the globe, and there are meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous all around the country, all around the globe. I had the privilege of traveling to Europe the last 2 weeks, and I got to attend some meetings in Germany, and I can tell you that AA is alive and well there. And not only do they have meetings locally, but they also have even English-speaking meetings, which was kind of convenient, seeing that that's my language of choice. So, yes, Mark, thank you. And Travis, if you're out there. Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Time for our featured speaker of the evening. This is brought to you by the Valley Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, the undefeated, undisputed king of speaker meetings, and this is brought to you for your sobriety pleasure. And so now, let's get ready for recovery. Our speaker has been a sober member of the fellowship since January of 2007. He has been secretary for several AA groups and is an active sponsor for many recovering members. Last year, he, along with his wife, started the Celebrate Recovery group in Lemoore. In his words, the key to healthy sobriety is acceptance. And now, with all the earnestness at your command, will you welcome, please, from Hanford, California, Steve C.
Thanks. My name's Steve, and I am an alcoholic. I know that everybody was taking their chips tonight. Kind of made me count off those months, those first couple months of sobriety. I started out drinking early on, and by the time 35 years approximately had passed of drinking, partying, I ended up in a meeting over in Tulare, the Wednesday noon meeting, and it changed my life. But that first year of sobriety was Mr. Toad's wild ride. You know, it seemed like everything that people talked about, I was so far away from. That question tonight, was this stuff, is it real? And I'm here to tell you, 4.5 years sobriety, it's absolutely real. When they read the promises in the meetings, I can count off a lot of them. And in that first year, I couldn't count off any of them. Life sucked. I was tired of being sick and tired. You know, I was raised in California for the most part, but somewhere, I was 11 years old when we moved to Alaska. And we left Morro Bay, went up there, we spent a couple years in Alaska, went to Kingman, Arizona, of all places, and then we went back to Alaska. In that traveling, going back and forth, my 9th and 10th grade years in Arizona, it's a lot of partying. It's all about going to Lake Mojave, getting out of Kingman. I mean, the wind blew 360 days a year. I had dreams of going back to Alaska. I remember in art class drawing a picture for the art folder with me and a bag of some unknown substance in my back pocket, hitchhiking back to Alaska. You know, reality, even back then at 14, was a far cry from being accurate. I seen things the way I wanted to see them. By then, I'd already really taken on the drug scene and the alcohol scene. It was just part of life, and I loved partying. There wasn't any hurts or anything major going on in my life. If anything, I was the baby of the family, and I kind of got by with murder. And I could do anything or talk mom or dad into just about anything. Had an older brother and sister that they dated me too. Money, we were living in Alaska, the Alaskan pipeline was going on, and life was good. But I still loved to party. It wasn't about numbing the situation, not until later in years. But getting back to what I originally said, I remember that first year of sobriety. And I'm here to tell you, this program absolutely works. He introduced us, or introduced me, saying that my wife and I started to celebrate recovery. But the foundation for recovery started right here in Alcoholics Anonymous. That big book, it works. But we have to work it. We have to submit ourselves, our will, over the care of God. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it and how it's going to work. When we read the book and it talks about change, we change just about every part of our life. Anyway, as I went on through my early part of life, like I said, it was about partying. By the time I was 24, though, I had moved from Valdez, Alaska to Houston, Texas. And, you know, in Houston, one thing I found out about myself was I was a chameleon. I'd go almost anywhere. If I was in California, I'd wear the flip-flops and the shorts. Went to Texas, it was about cowboy boots and a cowboy hat. Going to the bars. Where were the best bars? Country and Western. Yeah, to this day, I can't hardly stand to listen to it. But anyway, so as time went on, I ended up with my first divorce at 24. And I moved back to California in 1982. In 1982, there was a lot going on in California as far as Humboldt County. And there's a lot of runs back and forth and living in Paso Robles. And, you know, but I never went anywhere without that ice chest full of beer. Nowhere. If I was going to go on a road trip, it was all about hitting the liquor store, filling my ice chest full of my favorite drink, Miller High Life for any of you. And Jack Daniels. That was just life. By the time I was 26, I remarried and I was married for 14 years. I'd worked a lot of good jobs. Money wasn't an issue. But after 14 years of marriage, I went through my second divorce. Looking back now, every time I went through a divorce or a marital situation, alcohol was a major part. They didn't like it. I liked it. They needed to leave me alone, and if they would, everything would have been okay. But I was working at the time for the Department of Corrections. I had just gone to work for them. I was living over in Salinas, and life was good. I was making decent money, and then 2 years into that employment, I went through that divorce. And I remember thinking that, you know, for the first time in my life, maybe I could really drink like I always wanted to drink. And I did. For the next 3 or 4 years living in Salinas, I ended up with one DUI and some trouble at work, but everything was still pretty good. And I decided to move to the valley where my family lived, over in Hanford. And I had my mother's husband, my stepfather, was sick. And I came over here. And I remember spending a lot of nights as a decent individual, helping out, doing what I needed to do, going to work. But every night it was about drinking until I passed out. When I passed out, there were a lot of nights that I'd say, I need to quit. I'll never do this again. As the big book says, we swear off, sometimes with and without a solemn oath. Swore off alcohol, I don't know how many times, but never made it more than 12 hours that I can recall, other than being sick. If I had the flu or something, that might be a time to slow down a little bit for a day or two. But I love to drink. I love to party. I wouldn't say that I was strictly a bar goer, although I did like them. But towards the end, it was all about staying home, drinking as much as I could, usually stopping at the liquor store, grabbing the 12-pack and the bottle of Jack. On the job I was on, I was hating pretty much, and I was taking Xanax along with my Jack and trying to get rid of some anxiety. And in 2007, actually 2006, it was September 11th, 2006, all the years of drinking, I'll say that decision-making has gotten a little rough. It wasn't real accurate. And one night, I made a decision that almost got another man killed. And they sent me home on administrative time off somewhere around the end of September of 2006. And I sat there anxiety was at an all-time high. And the only thing that was working, even the Xanax wasn't. Seeing doctors, and I think a lot of us alcoholics are doctors' worst nightmare, because we can lie like the wind, you know. We can lie to get anything we want when we want it. So at one point I was taking the Xanax. One time I remember having them switch me off and trying to go to the antidepressants. I'd heard a few things about the alcohol and how they reacted. Bottom line is, 3 months worth of switching back and forth and drinking a lot of alcohol. I'd hoped that I wasn't going to wake up. And that's really where alcoholism had taken me. I'd gotten to a point where every night I passed out, I really said not so much a prayer, but a wish to God that I didn't believe in. Take me out. Don't let me wake up. When I got sober, after 3 months of this, it was December 31st, 2006, and it was a decision to go to the bar so I didn't have to sit home with the wife. If I stayed home, she was going to stay home. If we went out, I could dodge her at the bar. And that sounded like the best decision. So, we ran around the bar all night. I seen her maybe a whole 5 minutes out of the whole night. And we left somewhere after 2 o'clock. Excuse me. Got home after 2 o'clock. And I didn't go to bed. She was pissed. She went to bed. I was still sitting in the recliner drinking that morning when she got up about 8 o'clock. That's my recollection. Said that she was going to her mother's. I said, great. See you later. Soon as she left, I called the locksmith to change locks, and I had hoped that she'd never make it back in. But wouldn't you know, before he could finish that last screw in the lock, she came back, and all hell broke loose. And I ended up with a domestic violence. I can justify it by holding the door, and she fell, and all kinds of good stuff. Bottom line is, I had the domestic violence. I also decided to run, like a good alcoholic will. Jumped in the truck, ran around the corner, realized that I can't drive. But, you know, you have to understand, I'm in a t-shirt that's lacy tight, hiking boots, and pajama bottoms. And I'm around the corner in the truck. And I sat there for about 45 minutes until the best of my ability thought, they got to be gone by now. So I go to pull away from the curb, and as soon as I did, a Tulare PD came around the corner. She must have described me perfectly when they pulled me over, but I didn't stop because I was only a block away from the house. I pulled into my driveway, and they weren't happy. They arrested me, and that's when I got my third DUI. I missed one in between, but that was my third DUI and a domestic violence. It was January 1st when I got arrested. You know, we went out on the 31st, and I was still partying that morning on the 1st. And somewhere in the middle of the night, on January 1st to January 2nd, you know, they talk about a spiritual awakening. All I know at the, for the best description was I was sick. I was sick and tired. I couldn't fight life like I had been fighting anymore. I was done. And I remember calling out to a God who I didn't really believe in. I called out for help. For the first time in my life, I didn't make a deal. We all know the deals. Oh, God, get me out of this one. And no. This was that moment of clarity, that moment that I wanted something different. A lot of times when I'm working with new people, I'll ask them, you got your life here, or you got the one that you see people around the rooms of AA have? The life seems a little good, even happy. What's that phrase, happy, joyous, and free? Okay, so do you want crap or you want happy, joyous, and free? It's a decision. When I made the third step decision to turn my will and my life over to serve God as I understand Him, all I had to do was think back that night in jail. They say that you need to remember your last drunk. They say that you need to remember exactly what was going on. Some of us that were blackout drinkers, we don't always. It's not real clear. Because I can't tell you all the details of that day before. I know there's a lot of them. But my moment of clarity was in that jail cell. All I remember is that I was on the floor, on my knees, crying out to a God that I really didn't understand. And I cried out for help. God, I can't live like this anymore. I'm tired. Either take me out or show me something better. And I really, at that point in time, preferred take me out. Take me out of my misery. Life sucks. I'm here to tell you, and I'm going to jump 4.5 years ahead. Life doesn't suck. I love life today with a passion. to have a passion for other alcoholics. Because you know what? They're the only ones that understand me, and I'm the only one that will understand you. We are a different breed. We're screwed up in a lot of ways, but we're smart. I can go on with positives, but I'll say we're devious, we're liars. We love to take advantage of people, not even when we don't want to. But if we want a drink bad enough, we will. I promise it'll be the last time I beg for $10.
Yeah, right.
You know, my experience was, like the big book says, I don't wish to shut the door on it. We're not going to ignore it because that's who we are. But I love today exactly who I was, what I did, and how I did it. There are so many men that I work with today that are in the same spot. Not every exact detail of their life do I relate to, but as far as the obsession to drink, powerful message. The obsession to drink is identical. When I decide I want to drink, there is no stopping. And I never lied to myself, not once, that I'll just have one beer. My entire adult life was, when I went out to drink, it was to get blasted. Cleaned up the language. You know, if you're not going to party right, why do it? I feel the same way about my sobriety day. I'm telling you, do this thing wholeheartedly, step into it, read that book. I was blessed. I walked into that first meeting 4.5 years ago, and I remember 5 guys, 2 women vaguely, and that's new for me. But the one guy was talking about day 1 and how hard it was that first day not to take a drink. There was another man there that was recovering from liver failure. And my liver back then was really swollen and sore. And he had a transplant, and he was sitting there with a blanket around him. And he was still at a meeting. But when I walked out of that meeting, I remember the smiles, I remember something genuine. But most of all, there was a guy, another alcoholic, put his arm around me and stuck a big book under my arm. It was the best thing that ever happened in my entire life. He didn't just stick the big book under my arm and kick me in the ass and tell me to leave. He started calling me. What do you want?
Hey, you ready to go to another meeting?
No! Oh, I'm about ready to eat dinner.
Dinner will wait.
And he'd show up. Then I stopped answering the phone. He'd end up there anyway. Get the door, nothing. Actually, he never knocked. He honked the horn. But we ended up with this really cool friendship. And in the friendship, I decided I wanted what he had. I wanted to be happy, joyous, and free. He was kind of a carefree individual who I knew never to screw with. He'd kick my ass. Now I know he wouldn't, but I thought he could, and that was good enough for me. You know, I'm going to drop back. Remember, I've been a correctional officer. And do correctional officers, most of us, back down? No. We're used to barking orders and telling people exactly how it's going to be. But what happened to me was, for the first time in my entire life, from reading that big book, and I was probably on chapter 3 or 4 at the time, I realized that I was going to have to listen to somebody else. And it might have been something he said or something that came to me from that moment of knowing that there was something different and it was achievable. But I was going to listen to another man. I wasn't going to make all the decisions myself. And it was actually one of the biggest reliefs I felt as a man in my entire adult life. What's happened to me in AA is I've made some of the best friends ever. But there's two of them that just are dear to my heart because they've watched me grow. I know I've been a part of their growth. But more than anything, I know that I could call them right now and they would drop what they're doing and come see what's going on with Steve. But in return, I'd do the same. There's a fellowship that goes on in these rooms that you can't explain to anybody until they walk in, until they've stuck out their hand. They've dropped their shoulders and started looking around and actually being honest with themselves and being honest with another human being. That guy that stuck the big book under my arm, he also, a few months later, I decided I needed a sponsor. I'd been reading, and I'd been doing what he told me to do. But I asked him to be my sponsor. And he kind of got a funny smile on his face, and he said, "I'll be your friend." I said, "I don't need a friggin' friend. I need a sponsor." And he laughed and said, "I'll be your friend. Don't worry about it." There's an older guy over in Tulare at the time, had 39 plus years, Ivan. And I was kind of upset, and I told Ivan I'd been looking for a sponsor, and I asked Jeff, and he told me to be my friend, and Ivan started laughing. He said, "That's what I told Jeff 18 years ago when he asked me to be his sponsor." It's funny how things that go around come around. When we were out there drinking, it wasn't always good. But in the rooms of AA, I can guarantee you, it's always good if you're doing the right thing. If you're putting your best effort into this thing called sobriety, this thing called recovery. You know, the first three steps were tough. Actually, the third step. The first one, I didn't have to struggle with. I knew that I could not control alcohol, that I had a problem with it. It had me. And my life was unmanageable. Second one, I did believe in a God that I was taught by as a young child. And I grew up with that God. At one point in my heyday of partying after that second divorce, I threw a bottle of Jack Daniels through a wall and left it there for about 3 months and hung stuff on it because I cussed out God and was done with the religion thing. So I was really afraid going through the steps that he had never forgive me. And I went through step two and came to believe the power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Wow. Sanity? I didn't think I was insane, but you know, Einstein's definition says that if we keep doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result, that could be classified as insanity. Well, I did that for a lot of years. And step three was made a decision. Wow. You mean I gotta give everything over to him? If I make a decision to turn my will and my life over the care of God, as I understand him, you mean I really have to stop and pray and work through some things? Yeah, everything. But what really helped was having those friends that I had met in AA. When I worked with them and went through those struggles of divorce, legal issues, children, estranged children, estranged wives. You know, most of us alcoholics have a boatload of baggage, crap, that we need to work through and dig through. But working with those friends, it was possible. I still got stuff going on in my life that seems bigger than me, but they're not bigger than my God. Today, you know, Mark was asking me, is there a saying that you really like out of the big book or through AA in the rooms? And it's let go and let God. I think if there was any one thing that I had to really learn how to do, it's let go and let God. Because every time I get my screwed up thinking involved in some decision that's major, it doesn't turn out very well. And when I work with others and I put my faith in that all-powerful God, who I choose to call Jesus Christ, God, it works out. And no amount of stress, anger, ego, no amount of Steve has as much power as that God. So I'm going to ask you one more time, especially the newcomers. What you had or what you see in AA, make a choice. Give it all, because I'm telling you, Rick, I hope you don't mind me quoting you, and I hope I get it right. I was a few months sober when I remember Rick saying that if he would have written out a list of everything he had hoped to have out of the sobriety thing out of AA, he would have sold himself so short. And that is the absolute truth for me. At 1 year, I was going to a lot of meetings over in Tulare, and there were these guys with 15 to 35 years that I had the pleasure of being able to know and work with. They were there when I went to Pine Recovery at about 7 months sobriety. Because of those DUIs and stuff, I had to make a deal with the courts, and you know, I didn't want to go. But my sponsor and a couple other friends said, you know what, Steve, don't go there to see what you can get. Go there to see what you can give. I thought, what the hell do I have to give? 7 months? Nah. But you know what? I had 7 big months under my belt. I was already working the steps with a sponsor. And those other guys that I met in Pine Recovery, I was able to talk to a lot and work with. We went to the Lion Club every day, that mile-long trek, or whatever it was, in 100-degree weather, didn't matter. I still got so much from that 90 days. And I ended up having to go into 90 more days of sober living, part of the court bargain. And that 90 days gave me a chance to work out some things with the psychotic wife I was living with at the time. I could have never dreamed, and I want this message to go across, I could have never in my wildest imagination and dreamed of life working out so beautiful compared to where I was 4.5 years ago. At the time when I met Joe at the Lano Club, I had 7, 8 months, I think it was 8 months, and I remember hearing some messages. Sometimes we don't always take it in, even when we're speaking it, but when we're struggling, what I've learned is acceptance. On page 417 of the big book, I've heard a lot of old times say, oh, screw that acceptance crap. I don't want, you know. For me, when I accept everything to be exactly as it's supposed to be at this exact moment, and I quit trying to get my fingers and hands in it to change it to what I think it should be, because you know what? If somebody comes to you with a wanting your opinion, I'm still careful about giving that opinion. My opinion has no part in the recovery, but is absolute is what God's doing in their life and what we can find an answer for in the big book. I do believe in the big, big book. But if you read the big, big book and the big book, man, they are parallel. And what I believe in with all my heart is AA. If I wouldn't have been given this foundation for a way to live life on life's terms, I wouldn't be here today. With the liver swollen, no hope to live, an absolute disgust for religion. I was too smart for that. They were all hypocrites, you know. And now I belong to a church over in Lemoore. My new wife and I are ministry leaders for Celebrate Recovery. And every time an alcoholic walks through the doors, I have to take them straight to an AA meeting. Because this is what really, really works. I can blow smoke up their backside about everything else. Oh, look at this. This is how good life has gotten. No, no. Get your nose in the book. Do the deed. Read. Work the steps and let the steps work you. However you want to think about it, but work the steps and turn your will and your life over the care of God. And this program absolutely works. I love it. If you can't tell by now, I love the program of AA. When I was in Pine, and I'm going to close with this. When I was in Pine, there were a lot of other substances. People that were dealing really hard with some other substances. And one of the best things that I learned, and it wasn't from me, to this day I believe it's from God, was remove the word alcohol sometimes, but the big book works. But most of those people that were struggling with their other addictions had a core or a foundation problem, and it's alcohol. Alcohol was always easy to get a hold of. For me, because of the jobs I took later on in life, I had to get rid of everything else, and alcohol was my lover. It was my mistress. It was everything that mattered to me in life. So when I finally admitted that anything mind-altering for me is wrong, it takes me right back to where I used to be, and I can't tolerate it. So today, it's a life choice. I want to clarify that mind-altering thing. Some of us run into some real mental problems. Hey, when you medicated, self-medicated for many, many years, depression was my biggest struggle. I told you the anxiety medications and the booze and all that. For the first time in sobriety, I want to say at 18 months, it was right around there, I had to go see a doctor, and I didn't realize it, but when I went into the doctor's office, it was all in black. Now, I'm 53 years old. I don't go the goth route or any of that crap. But I was in black. As I chose the pants that morning, I chose the T-shirt out of the closet, I dressed in black. And I went in to see this doctor, and man, you know what? Emotions were going everywhere. I hated my wife. I hated life. And I thought, what's this sobriety stuff? You guys said it was happy, joyous, and free. And it was up until that point. But the mental part started really kicking in for me. And I ended up going to see this doctor, and he gave me a referral. And I ended up taking some antidepressants for, I don't know, it was about 6-8 months. And I worked through some really difficult times in my life. And as those started subsiding, and the doctor and I were talking about it, and by a doctor's direction, I weaned myself off the medication rather than before. I just stopped taking them and bounced off the walls for a little while, you know, because that's how we did things. But for the first time, I did it the way the doctor told me to. And I came back in this, like, an airplane landing on the strip, nice and gradual and slow. And I came in for my landing back into recovery and sobriety. And it's been beautiful ever since. So any of you that are going through that struggle of newfound sobriety and the motions hit and all kinds of weird stuff goes on, get with your sponsor, find a friend, and if you need to, get to the doctor. The Big Book even talks about, through the doctor's opinion and a couple other places, how necessary medical and psychiatric help is for us. Because we're a screwed up lot sometimes, you know? So, with that, I'll close. I thank you guys for being here. God bless you, and have a wonderful journey on this road to recovery. Thanks.